Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 146.
This week on the podcast, the Senate sends a letter to Iran to warn the world that Iranians may be secretly in control of the Iranian capital. Next stop, Washington!
Hillary Clinton doesn't know if we care about Chelsea's wedding or her own yoga schedule, but she decided to just make an executive decision about the whole thing, and now we'll never know.
And the Secret Service is populated by the same drunk frat guys you always suspected it was.
The Senate is happy to keep their least favorite person, Eric Holder, employed just to show us how wrong abortion is, since that's relevant.
And Bibi Netanyahu is not even trying to care what he said before, and is now desperately shouting conservative talking points so people remember he's tough on enemies.
Bristol Palin is engaged to the Rascal Flatts lifestyle, and now to a man, too.
And a genius conspiracy theorist tricks Glenn Beck into badmouthing his beloved NRA via concerns about taxes and the Muslim Brotherhood.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Yes.
And that's what you should do. So we're coming to you on Monday again.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's a thing that we've been up to a lot.
Yeah.
I
was out of town. Went to the desert, got some desert sun.
People are busy on weekends,
that's
A.
Right.
And B, it was so hot this weekend.
Oh my God.
It was a nightmare. It was a
just
complete nightmare.
Oppressive.
It was too hot for me to do the thing that I like to do in hot weather and go beach walking.
Yeah, you couldn't even, you couldn't get in your car. There was no way to get to the
beach
without
being exposed to the elements in some way.
Yeah, that's what it was.
And those elements included traffic, I would imagine, because everyone
for
probably
you, they
had this
did.
Idea.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
So, in any case, this was sort of a hilarious week for news.
It was. It was good.
Because the major news of the week was this Iran letter that the Senate sent, which was just the most ridiculous boondoggle I think I've ever heard of.
Yes.
The word treason.
A chance to use boondoggle.
Finally. God. The word treason keeps getting thrown around, and I keep being like, you don't want to be the person that spurred the use of treason repeatedly in the media.
I know.
You just don't want to be that person. That person, by the way, is Tom Cotton.
Well, there's a lot of reasons you don't want to be Tom Cotton.
Genius.
We'll get to a
Senator
lot of them
John
later.
Tom Cotton.
Yeah.
A Republican from Arkansas.
Right. He's the youngest member of the Senate, by the way.
Well, it shows. He got together 46 of his Republican friends,
mm-hmm,
and had them write this letter to Iran that was going to, you know, try to undermine these negotiations the Obama administration is in. And then basically everyone walked away pissed.
Right.
The only person who wasn't pissed was Bill Kristol, who thought everything was going swimmingly. But he's famously wrong about everything.
Yeah.
There's literally an article in Salon that's just instances that Bill Kristol made wrong predictions about things. And
totally.
It's most of his predictions.
Well, we talked about him a lot in the last
presidential election
because
he's not a man who knows what's going on most of the time.
No.
But so in any case, conservative media knew it was a boondoggle, so they just kind of stopped talking about it at a certain point, or they would call it a distraction, which is my favorite thing.
Right.
But basically, the letter itself was, like, condescending and obnoxious, and kind of implied that Iranians, like, don't really understand how the American system works.
Guess who else doesn't?
American senators, 47 of them, who sent this letter to Iran.
That's too many to not know.
That's almost half the Senate, guys.
Yeah.
That's almost half of the Senate, and that's most of the ruling party in the Senate.
Yeah, that's right.
It's,
where were the other 8 Republicans on this, by the way? Do you think they were like,
I know exactly
guys.
Where they were. They were uncomfortable because, first of all, it begins with Bob Corker, who's he's the head of the Foreign Relations Committee in the Senate.
Did not
sign it, did not vet the letter.
No, didn't.
In no way wanted to be involved in this letter. It was sort of like, this is not a plan for me.
Yeah.
Jeff Flake, surprise, surprise, was sort of like, never mind, guys. This is not a great plan.
Yeah.
John McCain, at a certain point, started to walk back the support that he had offered because he was embarrassed about how this all had looked.
Well, and some of the
people...
You know,
he'll trigger finger any kind of nonsense.
I saw that Rand Paul today said something like that he signed it to help Obama.
Right.
You know, like... so they all sort of like... They all had sort of like their, you know, ridiculous excuses for this.
Well, no, because they all had to walk it back because it was so embarrassing.
Right, it was super embarrassing. It was
wrong,
by the way.
Well,
I mean,
and they also, by the way, several people, academics, an Iranian minister, a bunch of people noted that the letter even incorrectly states that the Senate has the power to ratify treaties, which it does not.
Because the whole point was that because Obama made this, you know, agreement with them doesn't mean that it would have to last past his, right. you know,
we don't have to go along with it when he's done.
Right. He was like, a lot of us are going to be around here in the Senate a lot longer than he's going to be in the White House. And like, that was sort of like the whole point of the letter was like, right. that we can sort of like just end this whenever we want, even if he, you know, if you guys come to an agreement.
Yes. In a classic Senate move right. where they'll unratify a treaty.
Sure.
Like they have the power to do according to this letter, right. but not according to the Constitution.
No.
Even Peter King, who, by the way, loves a war. Was,
totally.
Obviously, he's not in the Senate, so he didn't get the chance to sign his name to this letter, but said he was very embarrassed about it. He said he would not have, and that it was sort of not a helpful
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's when Peter King, a man who's considering running for president just to warmonger, is talking about how you shouldn't be writing a dumb letter. Like, don't write right. that letter.
Well, and Obama hilariously said that he felt sorry for them, the people who signed the letter. And then he also, I think, rightly said, and this is the other thing that I don't think that these Republicans were thinking about. They weren't thinking about a lot when they did this, but they certainly weren't thinking about the coalition that they were getting themselves involved in. Because the
the right coalition.
Because the coalition that they've become involved in are the hardliners on the right in Iran.
Yeah.
Because it's...
they also don't want a treaty, guys.
No, they don't. It's the sort of, you know, quote, moderate leaders of Iran who are working with the president and John Kerry on this. So, and Obama sort of rightly pointed that out, and he said, it puts them in an unusual coalition. It's somewhat ironic to see some members of Congress wanting to make common cause with the hardliners in Iran. So that was not a thing that they were expecting when they signed this letter either, although they should have been. Right. And that wasn't
that
a hard
That would have been
thing.
The most basic research they could have done to
right.
find out. I mean,
yeah.
especially given our past mistakes in the Middle East, where we've armed rebels that turned out to be enemies of ours. And
yeah, sure.
You just do your basic research when you're about to ally yourself with any side of an issue
right.
in the Middle East
right.
anyway.
And when you're about to undermine your own president.
Right, right. When you're about to commit an act that many could describe as treasonous and will
right.
describe as treasonous
right.
repeatedly throughout the week.
Right, as you and I discussed, we can't really figure out why to not call it that.
No, exactly.
I mean, it's a bold word, but like if somebody wants to tell me why
true.
We should stop using
right.
it, then
they're welcome
I'll
to.
Entertain, you know.
Right. It wasn't the word that me and Brent immediately thought of, but that's not to say we didn't understand it when it came up.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's what that sounds
that
like.
That sounds like treason when you really get down to it, when you yeah. really dissect what was going on there. That yep. sounds treasonous.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the reason that Tom Cotton is so concerned is because Iran, should they get the power to get nuclear weapons,
right.
might be in control of Tehran, their own capital.
Oh, my God. They
yes.
already are. They're already in control of Tehran, so God knows what we can expect for them next.
No, it could be anything.
Oh, boy.
Might make it to the second largest city in Iran, which I couldn't pronounce, so I yeah. didn't include it in this document.
Yeah, because he was on...
He
was on Face the Nation the other day, and Bob Schieffer sort of really kind of like let him have it, and
yeah.
Tom Cotton ended up
rightfully.
Being like a total goon. But he said...
Schieffer asked, like, what do you want out of this situation?
Right, exactly.
Like, what did you hope
yeah,
to
yeah,
gain
yeah.
from this? And what is your ideal outcome for these talks?
Yeah. And he said, here's his whole quote. He said, well, as Prime Minister Netanyahu said, of course, had to make mention of their,
don't
you know,
their
president,
their president
they wish they had.
Exactly.
Yeah. The alternative to a bad deal is a better deal. Okay. Mm. The Iranians frequently bluff to walk away from the table. If they bluff this week, call their bluff. The Congress stands ready to impose much more severe sanctions. Moreover, we have to stand up to Iran's attempt to drive for regional dominance. Here's where it gets good. They already control Tehran.
No.
Oh, my. Increasingly, they control Damascus and Beirut and Baghdad, and now
Sana'a
as well. I don't know what that is. I'm not a senator either,
no.
though. So, I do know that Tehran is the capital of Iran.
Right. That's one
so
of the things.
They do
that's
control
some geography
that.
That I
we
know.
We shouldn't necessarily be concerned about
right.
that.
Right. They're entitled to control Tehran to their
right.
heart's content.
I know we don't like them to control much.
Right.
But
their own capital seems like fair game to me. I don't
I
know. That's
yeah. Yeah.
There's not much you can do about that.
Nope. Mm-mm.
These are all, by the way, the other cities that they've named are basically all cities that we now control.
I was going to say. Yeah, I know.
So we're not ones to talk.
No. Or ISIS controls.
Or ISIS controls. Right. If you're Damascus.
Which is not great either. I get
no,
that.
Right.
But I mean,
no.
it's not Iran.
The people who aren't controlling it are the people who are either Iran or the people that should be controlling it.
Right, exactly.
It's some amorphous third party that is controlling these other cities. Obviously, a bunch of people on Twitter notice the gaffe, because that's where people fact check these days.
Right.
You know Tom Cotton went to Harvard?
No. I did not know that.
But I don't want to know
I
more.
Would like to unknow it.
But he, and he's also, I mean, he's a freshman senator. He's the youngest senator.
Yeah.
He, and that was sort of like immediately pointed out by everyone, because this was sort of like child's play. But as we said, not, right. It wasn't even run through the Foreign Relations Committee. It was just sort of like this weird thing where everyone panicked and was like, yeah, okay, I'll put my name on it.
I love what John McCain said, because he said that, he said that senators rushed to sign it without considering the blowback because of an impending snowstorm.
Sometimes you just, you know, with diplomacy, you want to be really,
you want to
rush through it because snow can be such a
I was going to say the weather.
Snow is such a, they don't have a lot of plows in D.C. You don't know how long you're going to be stuck there.
No.
You got to get in and get out. Diplomacy can not wait, obviously.
No, it can't.
It has to move forward relentlessly, even without thought.
Exactly. Well, and the thing that I think is so dumb about this is, besides what was in that ridiculous statement where Tom Cotton didn't know that Tehran is the capital of Iran, the things that he was saying about the deal are things that the president is saying about the deal, too. The president has said on numerous occasions that if it's not a good deal, there's no deal.
He's not trying to make a bad deal over there. That's not his plan. Like, he didn't go in thinking, you know what I'll do here?
Right.
I'll try to make the worst deal I can, because America sucks.
Right. Because we talked last week, I think, about like what the sticking points of this deal were. And, you know, they are things that if they don't get resolved, the president is not going to go along with.
No.
I mean, he's not going to be like, oh, yeah, we'll lift all the sanctions and just, like, let you guys
run amok with nuclear activity
and we'll just, like, pop in at some point and see what's going on and you can either let us or not. Like, that's not what the...
No.
If that was the deal, then that would have been simply done.
Right.
A long time ago.
Right. We wouldn't be in negotiations.
The reason that we're still
negotiations would be happening.
Right, exactly. The reason that we're still negotiating up to the last second, because the timetable ends this week for this deal, basically,
because
they can't figure those things out.
And this is a classic situation anyway, because you know what they're going to do is just extend the time. They're going to make a deal in the future. They've done that before many times.
I actually don't think that they probably
maybe
can
not this
do that
time.
At
now
this
with all this excitement going on, this might Tom Cotton might have accidentally forced them to make a deal by sending his stupid letter.
Yeah.
Here's the thing, though. You may not know a lot about Tom Cotton, because he's sort of a nobody.
We're here to tell you.
We're here to tell you more about him, because it turns out there's more to know.
Yeah. There's a lot more to know.
Yeah.
So besides this ridiculous, you know, Iran shenanigans that he's gotten himself involved in this week, he has gone on record saying a lot of other ridiculous things.
Yeah.
And so
we're here to tell you what they are.
Yeah, exactly. First, you know, he really thinks that Guantanamo Bay is something that Americans should be really proud of.
Really proud.
Really proud of. He says that
there,
we should
be
proud.
Too many empty beds over there. We should really get in there and get some more people
That's
over.
That's exactly what he said. He said the only thing wrong with Gitmo is that there are too many empty beds. He said that the people that are there are savages. He says the prisoners...
But he's proud of how we treat them. Mm-hmm.
Right.
He's proud of how we treat the savages.
Yes, he says the prisoners can rot in hell, but as long as they don't do that, they can rot in Guantanamo Bay.
He's a kind man with empathy in his, on the mind.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's also compared the negotiations of the UN Security Council that's going on with Iran right now to the appeasement of Nazi Germany.
Mm.
Oh, boy.
Republicans love to pull the Nazi card at any chance. And they always get pushed back. I don't know why they haven't just learned...
Yeah.
To stop saying the word Nazi so much.
There are also few people that are more into the killer drone program.
No, he's a man who loves a killer drone.
He does.
Mm-hmm. And also believes that the more we bomb, the safer we get.
That's right.
Bombing makes us safer.
Right, that's a direct quote.
That's a direct quote from Tom Cotton.
Mm-hmm. Yes, He's also...
may not surprise you guys to find out.
Right. He's also received $700,000 for a Senate campaign from the Emergency Committee for Israel. And that makes him sort of like one of the most pro-Israel senators
in Congress
due to money.
He's wildly pro-Israel
because
he's being paid off.
I was going to say, which may be, we may have just found our answer for this Iran letter.
Right. The direct result of
$700,000. It was a $700,000 letter to Iran.
Exactly.
What happened, basically.
By way of Tom Cotton's office from the Emergency Committee for Israel.
Yeah. Bingo.
As an army lieutenant in 2006... he called for the prosecution of two journalists from the New York Times for espionage.
Oh, for espionage. Interesting.
New York Times journalists committing espionage by reporting the news.
Yes, exactly.
As they often are doing.
But not Tom Cotton.
He's not committed treason or espionage.
No.
All he's doing is being a patriot, you know?
I see.
A drone-loving, prisoner-hating patriot.
Yeah. He also called food stamp recipients... addicts.
This is my favorite one, by the way, because is he implying that they're food addicts?
No.
Because people are food addicts.
They're addicts to the teat of big government.
That's
what they're addicts.
That's right.
Too.
Because this is a curious kind of program to refer to everyone as an addict for. Because you
Those
have to be a food addict to survive.
Yeah.
Humans are food addicts.
They are. I am.
I would love to be an addict to the government teat. I think that would... I was talking just yesterday with some British friends of mine about NHS and how nice it is to be a person who benefits from the government teat, basically. How easy it is to get... Like, things that are, like, major medical decisions that you would, like, agonize over here are just, like, things their relatives are just getting done and not worrying. So, yeah. You know, government teat sounds nice. Tom Cotton sounds like an killjoy.
Totally. Yeah.
Oh, in any case. So,
back to this. We talked extensively about this last week.
We would never probably ever get to stop talking about this, and no, here we are this week.
Well, one thing that we talked about last week is that, you know... A big, we're about to talk about the Hillary Clinton email situation. The big issue that we were taking last week with this was the fact that she had not herself dealt with it. Yeah. And that was leaving sort of like a huge, you know, sort of vacuum for everyone to sort of like fill with rumors. And for Democrats to, this is your power. This is
back
to
my HuffPost's article about the power of an information vacuum.
Yeah, exactly.
People will fill that shit with whatever they come up with.
And they were doing it.
And they did it.
They're still doing it, even though she's spoken to it. But she didn't really necessarily answer the questions the way that people wanted her to.
There's a time frame. You wait too long, and the vacuum fills up without you, and then your information is only one of a thousand crazy theories that everyone has.
Right. So she basically felt like she had to address it head-on this week, because there was no way that she couldn't at this point. So, but before she even got to address it, it was a giant debacle, which is just like...
Giant.
This is... just goes back to
classic
the point.
Classic Hillary.
Here's what happens.
So imagine you're Hillary Clinton and you're going to address a major scandal.
Right.
So you think
that
yourself.
You have been saying, well, that you haven't said anything, but that everyone on your team has been saying that the press is treating you unfairly about
it. Right.
So what is your plan but to piss off the press?
Because why not? Just keep going with it.
That can't be
this
your plan.
This is a classic Hillary problem. Logistics.
Yeah. Logistics.
She's not a woman with a head for logistics.
No,
she's not a woman with a team with a head for logistics.
Because what happened was she decided that she was going to address this at a press conference last Tuesday, and she announced it a few hours before it was happening. Now, the problem was is that she was going to be doing it after a speech that she was giving at the UN.
Right. So the press conference was going to be at the UN.
At the UN.
Where you need 24 hours to get press credentials.
Right.
So announcing a press conference a few hours before you're giving it is not 24 hours in advance,
it's
as
not.
You might have noticed.
So there was, as one reporter said, total mayhem, because it was just, like, they were trying to process all of these press requests as quickly as they could. People were tweeting photos from the press line. The press line is, like, super long. People are not moving. Like, there was, like, a whole thing of tweets that I saw where, like, people were, like... standing in the press line, been here an hour and a half, have moved 5 feet. You know, like, all of these, like, these reporters were pissed off because they couldn't get press credentials to go in and cover the press conference.
Right, and, you know, here's the thing. You only hold a press conference for the press.
That's what you're doing.
That's what the press conference is for. It's not for your own enjoyment.
No.
It's to give messages to the press.
Yeah.
So if the press can't get into your press conference, you failed at throwing a press conference.
Yeah.
It's like, if we claimed we were throwing a press conference right now, that would be roughly as effective as what she did, because we have no press here.
Yeah.
And she, likewise, had no press there because no one could get in.
Exactly. But a UN staffer said the organization was overwhelmed with all of the last-minute requests. And at one point in the line, a UN guard came up and took down a list of people who were trying to get into the event. And he said they would be trying to speed up the process. And when Business Insider, which is who was, you know, writing about this, asked for more details, he replied, "I'm just the guy with the gun." So it's like, I mean, so
you want to be treated fairly by the press.
Treat them fairly.
Treat them fairly.
Yeah.
They're the ones with the pens.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're nobody without the press.
Yeah.
If you're a politician.
Exactly. So now, getting to what she actually said, it did not appease anyone who were already mad.
Well, there was no way to, this issue is unappeasable at this moment.
It's sort of, I agree. Yes.
There's nothing she can say about it.
No, exactly. Because there were sort of the main points that she sort of had to hit on, she didn't do to sort of everyone's liking.
No.
So, because she, you know, obviously she was running this private, she had her private email address running off this private server, and so that was what she was, like, talking about. And she said she saw it as a matter of convenience. I now, looking back, think that it might have been smarter to have those two devices from the very beginning.
Right, because this whole thing is because she doesn't want to carry two phones, right?
Right.
I mean, that's, like, part of the whole problem here.
Right, exactly.
Everyone I know who works for the government, by the way, has two phones.
Yeah.
Like, that's one of the things that happens in government is you have to have an annoying second BlackBerry that's annoying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Is setting up an email server in your home to run this a matter of convenience?
Hard to know. It doesn't sound that convenient to me as a person who's not fully briefed on the technology issues at play here.
Yeah.
It sounds like it would have involved a similar amount of effort as setting up an email server really anywhere.
I agree.
Including in her office.
Right.
Where I feel like she might have considered setting up this email server.
Yes, exactly.
But she also, you know, part of the issue here is that this meant that she gets to determine what is private and what's public because she's using the same email server for her private email and her public email.
Well, right.
And so she gets to say, and this is, I think, where critics, I probably rightfully, can kind of pick apart her argument, is she's saying, like, she released all of the emails that were relevant,
right.
But she's left out emails that were about purely, you know, private matters, like Chelsea's wedding or her yoga classes or whatever.
Right.
The thing is that she is the one, or her people are the
ones. It's her lawyers that went.
It's her lawyers that are determining what is personal and what's not personal.
And she did release, like, what the criteria was for that, and she did, her office did later claim that all of them had been read. So I think that sort of, like, helped appease some people. But yes, right.
But this is all still coming from her staff on her, you know, this is...
Right, exactly.
This is all still... None of this information comes from a third party. So if you are already a rumor monger of sorts who is scandalized by this information, as you were probably scandalized by Benghazi...
Yeah, exactly.
Then this probably doesn't appease you.
Well, and the other thing that doesn't appease those people is that those emails that she deemed personal... have been deleted from that email server, which I think is also, like, why can't...
Don't say the word delete.
Like, why can't they just live there? I get that it's, like, if it truly was just, like, an email about Chelsea's wedding, which has already happened, and you were helping plan the caterer, whatever the hell you were doing, then, like, fine. But, I mean, it's just sort of, I think, it's hard to imagine to a lot of people, A, that it was all, you know, done, not sort of...
Right, this is all above the board, like...
Right, exactly. And also, I think that I think that a lot of people, when they think about the emails that they send, and also when you think about the Clintons and some of the relationship they have with the people who that they are presumably working with,
there is no way
to think that, like, a personal email might not also contain some information that has to deal with her job.
Yeah.
I mean, my personal emails are that way. Do you know what I mean?
Of course. Mine too.
So, I mean, I would never say work things about, you know, in an email that had, like, a super personal thing in it. But I mean, like, I also don't send those from my work address, which I think is sort of, like, the broader point here. So.
No, and this also means that she doesn't have, you know, like, I think if you are a person who has a personal email address that you are using on your personal time, then that's, have a server in your house, and that's one thing. The fact that her work emails and her personal emails were mixed in together makes it so, like, it meant that, like, nobody was making that distinction before.
Right.
And now they're like, retroactively deciding what's personal and what's not personal.
Yeah.
And that, also, people want to know about how the catering negotiations went at Chelsea's wedding, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Now we'll never know because they erased them.
And the other main point that I think people picked on, and again, I think rightfully, is that, you know, she claims that she sent, quote, the vast majority of emails to government addresses, and those get automatically preserved. So basically, like, if she was sending an email to someone about a government matter, then she was using their government email address. But the problem is that she said a vast majority. So nobody knows exactly what vast majority means, and also what is contained in those emails that weren't sent to government addresses that didn't get automatically backed up.
And this is, like, one
and
of
those are things we'll never know.
I still feel like this is a double standard issue that really is only relevant to people because we care about dumb things like Benghazi. Like, ultimately, this is not concerning to me on sort of, like, a political level, because obviously we know that other secretaries of state have done the same thing.
Right. Well, you and I have always sort of, like, claimed that there was a double standard here, but, like, our issue is not this itself. We should be clear about that.
It's just the Clintons not planning ahead.
Right.
It's the fact that the Clintons, who seem to be our only organized hope for the presidency at this moment,
are completely unorganized.
Are completely disorganized and never fucking prepare for what they know is a double standard that's already in place.
Right, exactly.
Because ultimately, I don't give a shit about what was in her emails. I trust that the Clinton camp probably released the emails that they were supposed to release, and also trust that no other Secretary of State would have ever been asked to do this.
Right.
Like, all of those things are things that I trust. I just feel like I'm so annoyed that we can never trust them to be prepared.
Right. Exactly.
And that these scandals continue to plague them because they're not prepared.
Yeah.
They're unprepared people.
Yeah.
That's not the preparation for being president that I'm looking for. Yes. People keep telling me she's so fucking qualified. This does not speak to her qualifications as a president that we also know will have a double standard applied to her anyway.
I know.
Just as I was having this conversation with someone last night about, you know, they were talking about how, like, well, you know, Obama had this double standard, but if Hillary gets in there, it'll be fine. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me.
Right?
If ever there was a person who would attract a double standard, it is Mrs. Hillary Clinton. Like, she is a person who can attract a double standard in her private life. Like, she's not even in office right now, and she's got the double standard working against her.
Yeah.
Like, this is... double standards are, like, how they play the game with Hillary Clinton. That's how they defeat her, always.
Yeah.
And she never fucking learns from it.
Nope.
God, these fucking people.
Yikes. these people.
These problems.
Yeah. But
surprise, Boehner's going to investigate. He's going to get to the bottom of this one for us.
Because he's expected to announce this week a new investigation into Hillary's email practices as Secretary of State, including her admission that more than 31,000 emails were destroyed because she determined them to be personal, going back to what we were just talking about her personal emails.
I want there to be a government investigation into his tanning practices.
I agree.
I feel like
it's important.
I bet there are taxpayer dollars at play here that we're not aware of. And let me tell you one thing. I believe very strongly in paying my taxes, even if it has to go to pay Republican salaries. I know that's my civic duty. I will not pay for Republican tans.
No.
I will not.
I agree.
I draw the line somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel like somewhere a government car is driving him to the tanning salon.
I think you're probably right.
And I don't want any part of that. That man can take the metro to the to the tanning salon if he needs to get there.
That's right.
Meanwhile, if you ever thought that maybe Secret Service agents are just a bunch of drunk frat guys.
Well, that's right.
It turns out you're correct. Yeah. I have already told on this podcast many times my Secret Service story.
Right. Well, we have to keep reporting about the Secret Service
because they're
already.
It turns out they've been incompetent this whole time.
Right, exactly. I mean, you were once a human shield
for the Secret Service. I was a human shield for the Secret Service.
For Hillary Clinton.
For Hillary Clinton, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I saved Hillary Clinton's life that day, guys.
You did.
Uh-huh. And this is how she repays me, by the way. Thanks a lot, Hillary. But the Secret Service has continued to get themselves into hot water because... for years, I feel like it was, no one was talking about how incompetent the Secret Service was. I knew secretly because of my human shield experience.
Yeah.
But I feel like no one else was really having an experience with the Secret Service that led them to be concerned. Suddenly, the Secret Service has really been acting up.
I was going to say, there's been like a rash of those reasons. A
rash of Secret Service issues. Yeah. And the latest one is that two senior Secret Service agents are now under investigation because they crashed a government-issued car into the White House after a night of heavy drinking last week.
God, this is...
This is like some college-style shenanigans. Is.
Yeah.
Not even. This is like small-town, somewhere random shenanigans.
Yeah.
Like where everyone's just driving in circles around town because there's nothing to do, and then you get drunk and... I've seen this on television. I don't even know if this is what happens out there. This is not what we were doing in New York City.
Right.
But this is what I imagine is going on in both small towns with high school students and also among the Secret Service.
Yeah. But this just sort of, like, is following, like, a whole list of scandals.
I mean,
of drinking scandals, prostitution scandals, of fence-jumping scandals. I mean, there's...
Yeah, they've been doing no right of late. And they remember... I mean, they keep having to resign... The head of the Secret Service keeps having to resign. Like, every 5 minutes, there's a new Secret Service head because of this.
And Jason Chaffetz, I think, is that how you say that name? I don't know.
Yeah,
anyway,
really
he's the chairman of the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and he has been sort of like one of their most vocal critics. And there have been a lot of critics, really, actually, I think from both parties, because
bipartisan style shenanigans.
Right, because Obama gets to sort of pick who is running this department, and the last time that he had to pick, he picked someone from inside the department who had been like on his personal security detail, and there were a lot of calls from both parties that to bring someone in from the outside to sort of, you know, kind of like right the ship and like get sort of like knock some heads basically, and they didn't feel like anybody who was like currently in the Secret Service was probably because they were too much in the system.
It's like the Ferguson Police Department.
Right, yeah, exactly.
You want to bring someone from the outside. Here's my question though. I feel like, is there someone from the outside that's qualified to run the Secret Service? Like, who knows what's going on at the Secret Service not in the Secret Service?
I mean, I guess maybe, like...
Like a military?
Military,
like,
that's what I was going to say.
So
I mean,
boring.
Like... But I feel like a lot of the Secret Service people are, like, aren't they? A lot of ex-military people. They're not people that I trust
to hang out with anyway.
To be drunk driving into things.
No, that's true. Yeah, I don't know how you find a person who can both run the Secret Service and be trusted to not drunk drive a government car into a wall. But
yikes.
In any case... He said, very astutely, I think, it's never good to be drunk at work, especially if you're in the Secret Service.
Thank you, Jason.
So there you have it.
Right.
Don't be drunk at work generally,
mm-hmm.
but especially if you're in the Secret Service.
Right.
Try to stay sober at work.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Meanwhile.
So Loretta Lynch.
Remember when we had the perfect attorney general candidate that was definitely going to get confirmed? And so we just pushed that vote right up into the new term because we thought, we don't need to pass this in the lame dunk. There's lame dunk. Dunks, lame yeah. duck. There's no way this woman isn't going
to
be confirmed.
Sometimes it's hard to remember that we had such a perfect candidate because it was so long ago.
It felt like years. It was only months ago.
Right. We're coming up on, I think, like 120 days on it or something like that, basically. So it's been 4 months.
120 days where we felt like we didn't really need to worry about getting this pushed through during the lame duck because we were going to have such an easy time. It was going to be a cakewalk to get to get this candidate passed.
She's loved by all, Loretta Lynch. Her resume is, you know,
she's sufficiently moderate and yet sufficiently not moderate.
Right.
She's somehow everything to everyone.
Right. She has prosecuted people on Wall Street. She has prosecuted, you know,
the 9/11 people
because she's from New York. She really just, she's everything to everyone.
Yeah.
And yet, no one to
no one because Mitch McConnell basically said on Sunday that they're not going to give her a confirmation vote until the Senate finishes this ridiculous anti-trafficking bill that they're trying to pass. They're trying to sneak all these abortion amendments into.
Exactly.
It's not about trafficking, by the way. Everyone agrees that that human trafficking is bad.
Right.
But what they're trying to do is get the Democrats to vote against a human trafficking bill by sneaking abortion issues, anti-abortion measures into the bill.
Yeah.
And then making it look like they hate humans or whatever, you know.
So they apparently need to get that figured out before she
Here's what they don't need to do is get that figured out before they can confirm the attorney general.
No, they don't.
It's irrelevant.
Right. It's totally irrelevant. She's already been given the thumbs up by the Judiciary Committee. Three Republicans on that committee voted for her. There are a lot of Republicans who are sort of like on the fence about her, but there are worries on both sides that the longer this lingers, that it's not going to be good because Democrats are sort of worried that, you know, the longer that it waits, that there are more people that are going to break against her.
Right.
They started to break against her during her confirmation hearing because she said that what President Obama did with his immigration executive order was illegal.
Right.
So that's sort of like where their issues with her started. That's really sort of their only issue with her. And so the Democrats are afraid that she just may not get confirmed. Republicans who are
confirmed on a tiny margin.
Or a tiny margin, which they don't want either. Because right now she has four Republicans who are out in public for her, including all 46 who caucus with the Democrats. So that would be 50. If they voted on it, she would make it because Biden would come in and be the tiebreaker at that point. But like the Democrats don't really want that because like that doesn't look great for her. But Republicans who either are on the fence or in favor of her are also a little sort of...
Yeah, they're a little wary at this point.
They're a little
wary because... They're only going to get more wary because it's getting more politicized by the second.
And they're also wary about the potential for her not getting confirmed because she would also be the first African-American woman to head that department. So, like, they also don't want to be seen as, like, the people who shot that down. So it's, like, it's ridiculous because everybody's concerned about whether she's going to get whether she's going to pass nomination or not, but no one will vote on it and no one will come out in favor of her except, like, these four Republicans. So it's, like, they could be voting on this at any moment. They don't, it's like you said, they don't have to do this human trafficking thing.
No, the human trafficking thing is a thing that will never get resolved. So it's a convenient way to never vote on this attorney general thing because the human trafficking bill is just it's another one of their stupid games of chicken where they're like adding nonsense into a bill that's unrelated to the nonsense and then being like, why won't you vote on this? So what if it says we're going to shut down Obamacare? You hate human trafficking, don't you? Like, it's one of those things.
Yeah, exactly.
So like, this is never going to get resolved. The human trafficking bill is a dead in the water proposition because they're never going to remove and it's only going to pass if they remove the one thing that's making them interested in voting on it in the first place.
Exactly.
Because Republicans don't care about human trafficking. So it's a mess. Also, this is a mess anyway because they hate Eric Holder. So, like, what is their problem?
That's what I have never got about this is that, like, if they even sort of, like, remotely can stomach Loretta Lynch,
then, like, then isn't doesn't that better it behoove than Eric Holder?
Doesn't it behoove them to vote for her?
For
because
them?
They literally just, I mean, he's their boogeyman.
Yeah.
Maybe that's why they are not voting on her.
Well,
it's because the longer that they have him to sort of, like, point at and be like, Eric Holder is evil, we hate him, blah. Like,
yeah, I think that they get a lot of political,
Totally. Like, their base loves
that,
too. Yeah.
Which is, by the way, Eric Holder, a very respectable Stuyvesant graduate.
Oh, that's right.
I would not be so distrustful of a Stuyvesant graduate.
You know what? But they could make
the
same
general
boogeyman out of Loretta Lynch. She's also black.
That's true. I mean, right. Essentially, what they're doing is appealing to everyone's more racist instincts here.
Let's not pretend like that's not why they hate Eric Holder.
I think that probably because she is perceived as much more moderate, and because she's a woman, the aggressive way that they go after Eric Holder would not really fly with her.
No, it would, yeah.
They would have to come up with a new strategy where they were subtly misogynistic and racist, right. Which they are capable of.
They could do it.
If anybody could do it, it's them.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, I'm not worried
subtlety,
for them.
Subtlety, maybe not, but...
Yeah,
but Misogynistic and racist, certainly.
They can definitely handle. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, so it seems like a win-win for them,
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, I agree.
But, well, we're never going to see this happen. We're just going to be...
Eric Holder might just be done until the administration is over. Yeah, exactly.
It's never-ending Eric Holder.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we brought you last week news of how Ferguson's police department was finally out. You know, the Justice Department finally released their study of Ferguson's police department, and they were outed as being horribly racist and generally using black citizens to, like, make money for the city.
Yeah, well,
protests have since sprouted out.
No.
As a result of
you
that.
You say?
Right. And also because, in general, they have never stopped protesting in Ferguson because shit's a mess over there.
Yeah.
At a protest last Thursday, two officers got shot. So then it really got chaotic.
Yeah.
Because suddenly everyone was like, oh my God, are we supposed to be in solidarity with the police to feel sorry about these policemen getting shot?
Right.
The guy who was charged with shooting them, and they did not die. They were shot and injured, but they didn't die. Is a 20-year-old man named Jeffrey Williams. He was charged with first-degree assault, and he's admitted that he fired the shots, although he's claimed that he was aiming at something else.
He wasn't aiming at them. Right?
Don't bring a gun to the protest, guys.
No.
It's never a plan.
Yeah.
But in any case, this was after a huge manhunt. They finally got him, but there was, like, a huge manhunt, and they're still looking for people that might have been involved and blah, blah, blah. but, of course, you know, it was a black shooter and two white police officers.
Right.
So, of course, that only, like, further kind of embroils everyone in the same, like, racist chaos that they've been in the first place, because the racial tensions there are what caused all these protests to begin with.
Right.
And this is also after it was just after the police chief resigned.
Yeah.
And I think also there were the city manager and the municipal and a municipal judge resigned at the same time.
Yeah.
So they've had a number of resignations. So it's like real chaos over there right now. But in any case, so now there's like weird protests where like people are like going and rallying and saying thank you police.
Right.
Which is like a weird thing that happened in New York, where there was like this weird blowback after Eric Garner, where after de Blasio was like, cut this shit out, and the police were suddenly like, we'll turn our backs to you. Suddenly all these people started writing like, thank you police placards. And I was like, this is an oddly inappropriate time for that. Like, as much as we should all agree that it's nice that the police do a scary job for all of us.
Sure.
We do like pay them to protect us. So, like,
that's
if they are not protecting all of us, I don't think that that's a time that we should be thanking them.
Yeah.
As much as I'm a white person who is being protected by the police for the most part.
Right.
I also don't feel the need to thank them for protecting me over protecting, like, other people who are just like me but black.
Right.
Like, that doesn't seem like a thank you kind of proposition. Because I'm paying them my tax dollars to protect everyone.
Right.
Not just me.
Yes.
Now, this is created sort of an unusual dynamic, though, in Ferguson.
Right.
Because now, this is just on the heels of that report, so it's like, who knows what to think now.
Right. Well, and I think that, the protest leaders there and, you know, the leaders who are trying to work on change in Ferguson were obviously disappointed by this.
Yeah.
I think it was not
emblematic of how those protests were going, by
the
way.
No, well, and I think that is sort of like what we should remember and try and remember is that, and that is what, you know, the leaders there have also been saying, is that, you know, this was not a person who was involved in our movement. You know, I mean, did he show up at a protest and shoot people? Yes. But like, he was not a person who is sort of like one of the people who is really trying to, like, you know, get change done in Ferguson.
Yeah.
Like, he happened to show up and do something terrible. And I think that everybody can sort of, you know, agree that is what happened, but it should not affect the broader things that, like, everyone is trying to accomplish.
The discussion here is still about a police force that is using sort of like racism and stereotyping to enforce the law.
Right.
Like, that's what the broader discussion in Ferguson still is about.
At least those police officers were armed, which is more than you can say about some of the black people getting shot in Ferguson.
Anyway.
Still.
Digression.
You still shouldn't do that.
Right. Right. Don't.
I'm not advocating for it.
Don't shoot
the police. I'm just saying.
You shouldn't shoot anyone.
You shouldn't.
I don't.
No. We shouldn't have guns. We're on record as saying
that guns should be taken away from everyone.
Right.
Government goon style.
Yeah.
We're not afraid.
No.
But in any case, this is unfortunately, I feel like, also one of the things that, like, you know, there had not been much media coverage of the protests that were going on in Ferguson.
Right, exactly.
And, like, now we know they're happening, at least, which this is, like, the kind of thing that I feel like the media really fails us a lot of the time in terms of advocating for nonviolent, you know, nonviolent protests and nonviolent change, because those don't fucking make the news. And right. then, and not that I'm advocating that anyone should do something violent at a protest. I certainly don't like to be at a protest where someone is doing something violent. And I don't think it sends the message that you're hoping to send.
No.
But I also feel like there should be more responsible coverage of
right.
protests.
Would we have known that there was protests going on right now?
In general,
right, yeah.
in a way that means that this is not how we find out these are happening.
Totally. Yeah.
In any case, you know what's a great success?
God.
Obamacare.
It's just like... Every time I think that we will have done our last Obamacare success story on the podcast, you just...
It gets more successful every moment.
It can't stop itself.
Here are some more numbers for you. So, the Department of Health and Human Services published a report on Monday that showed that now, we know, overall, 16 million people have gained health coverage because of the ACA.
That's a lot of people.
Mainly with the exchange and the Medicaid expansion. 14.1 million got that coverage by securing private insurance or signing up for Medicaid through the exchange.
Yeah.
2.3 million got under their parents, you know, now that you can be 26 on your parents' health insurance, are now covered under their parents' health insurance, whereas yeah. they would not have been before.
Yeah.
The report is based in part on findings from a Gallup poll, which found that the uninsured rate has dropped from 20.3%, which is what it was when the exchanges began,
yeah.
To 12.3%, which is a huge drop and a much more impressive figure.
Yeah.
I mean, it should be 0%. But listen,
totally.
It was looking like it was going to go up to like 40%. So
well, I know. And what I think is so interesting is that like so many of the people who are like against this law are sort of they're now reaching to the point where it's like, well, we still have this many people uninsured. Do
right.
you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, exactly.
As if as their master plan would be to like insure everyone, which is not their plan,
welcome,
by the way.
Guys. Right. Go for it.
And what is funny is that their plan that they always are peddling is that they want to replace it with a market-based system. This is like code that they're using
right,
all
yeah.
the time for like, but that's what this is.
I
mean, because we just said 14.1 million people gained health coverage by securing private insurance.
Yeah.
That's market-based.
This is why the Heritage Foundation thought of this plan in the 80s.
Right.
Because it forces people to buy a private thing for private profit.
Right.
These are companies that are for-profit companies that are now
yeah.
making money because people are forced to buy from them.
This is the most capitalistic
way of handling this problem in the world.
That anyone could possibly think of.
Yeah. No, it's true. So that's hilarious. Of course, all of this could fall apart when the Supreme Court rules on King versus Burwell.
Yeah.
The dumb case that they shouldn't be even hearing as far as I'm concerned.
Yes.
Although, thankfully, if that happens, first of all, I think... I have a private theory about this.
Oh.
I'm trying to be optimistic about it because I just can't handle all the scaremongering that's going on.
I think you can be, but
I'm optimistic that the Supreme Court won't sort of change precedent because I think that that would be damaging on a political level that they're not trying to get involved in. But I also feel like if they did rule that in order to get these government subsidies, you had to have a state exchange, wouldn't there suddenly be so much pressure on all these states that refuse to set up exchanges from citizens who have now been benefiting
for
the last
exchange,
year
right.
from the federal exchange
yeah, I think so.
And from these subsidies
yeah.
to suddenly set up their state exchange?
Because
you know when we wouldn't need a federal exchange is if every state had an exchange.
Right.
And
exactly.
I also think that if that happened, people would suddenly be like, well, why didn't we take the Medicaid expansion? Because if you're required as a state to progress these, you know, to accept this program in order to get the subsidies,
yeah.
then like maybe then it's time to do it.
That's
you know,
true.
All
yeah.
these states were able to not do it because there was this fallback plan of the, you know, 34 states didn't set up their own exchanges, which is boggles the mind, first of
it
all.
It does. Yeah.
But second of all, they got away with it because we had this federal, you know, this federal program that was going to kind of cover their asses.
Yeah.
You know
well, and
who
I think
doesn't
that...
lose their subsidies if this, if King versus Burwell goes to shit?
Us.
California. New Yorkers.
I
like,
know.
Oregonians.
Kentuckians,
of all people.
Yeah.
I mean, and... They're going to have to spread the word to their neighbors over there because people outside of Kentucky are not going to have health care after that.
Well, and that's another thing that I think, like, on some level, there's going to... I mean, all of these states are going to be like, wait a minute, how come they get to have their health care?
Exactly.
Yeah,
yeah why'd they get to keep theirs?
Yeah.
Because they're estimating that 9.6 million people would lose their coverage if...
Right.
If they ruled that the federal exchanges can't use subsidies because it would just become unaffordable for everyone
right.
again. So, this is... A, why the Supreme Court should just slow their roll.
That's another...
But B,
yeah.
also why living in California is superior.
Superior, I know.
Why having a state exchange wins.
I often am reminding my parents of this because they are new California residents as of, like, August, I think. And, like, they are on Obamacare.
Yeah.
And they knew this. I didn't have to remind them of this. But there are... It's amazing getting to... You realize how great living in California is as you get to remind people, because, like, normally you're not reminding anybody because everybody I know already lives here. But
no,
like,
and listen, now I have sitting parents, in traffic is a pain in the ass.
Right, now I have new parents that are residents here, and I find myself quite often being like, you actually don't have to worry about that.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, like, these are things that I think you're sort of, like, subconsciously thinking you're going to have to, you know, thinking about healthcare and worrying about healthcare consumed so much of my early adulthood that the idea that, like, this is not going to be sort of, like, that if I lose my job, like, it won't end my life. Like, I won't die in a gutter because I won't have healthcare, and I won't be rejected from every health plan in California like I was before Obamacare took into effect. Like, these are things that I still sort of, like, have misplaced anxiety about because I'm so used to worrying about them. And the relief in knowing that I, like, really don't have to worry, that, like, ultimately I will be able to get some form of health insurance regardless of what happens, is, like, such a pleasant reminder that I have to think of all the time because I'm always worrying about it.
Yeah.
That it's just, like, I can't imagine what it would be like to go back to a system where I had to worry again. And that's what 34 states are looking at having happen.
Yep.
So it's crazy. Yep. But in any case,
it works.
It's working smashingly. 12 million people signed up in the last open enrollment. The CBO projections are being not only met, but they're being undercut or whatever. Right. It's cheaper than anyone thought it could possibly be. Just smashing success.
Yeah.
The only thing that could even be more successful is a single payer plan. That's the only way we could get more success than this.
That's it.
That's it. We showed it.
Maybe we'll get there.
And maybe, well, I have always said that I think that the thing that is so promising about what happened with Obamacare, because I, you know, I was very critical of the idea of adapting a Republican plan. I don't think that people, it's not ideal for me to have to purchase private insurance. I don't think that's the smartest or cheapest way to do this.
No.
But I think that what was missing from the American psyche was the idea that everyone deserved healthcare. And that is what the mandate provides,
right,
is the idea that everyone is supposed to and should have healthcare. That is what they have in Britain that makes it impossible to fully get rid of the NHS. Because they have sort of like what we have with Social Security, where you can talk about cutting Social Security and people don't get into that because they think you deserve Social Security. Social Security is something everyone thinks they deserve.
Right.
In Britain, everyone thinks they deserve healthcare. And that is the idea that we're working towards by having a mandate.
Yeah.
So I feel great about it.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it's going great.
Yeah.
I also feel great about how hilarious this Aaron Schock story continues to be to everyone involved.
God.
Aaron Schock, you might remember as the man who decorated his congressional office in the style of Downton Abbey.
Hasn't seen it.
Hasn't seen Downton Abbey.
Not a fan, but
knows he loves the style, I guess.
Yeah.
Remember how we said that they were starting to do ethics investigations into his dealings because there were a lot of suspicious things going on there?
Yeah, it's not looking great.
It's not looking great for him. Here's what we know, according to the AP. Apparently, Schock has basically, like, doubled his wealth since he was elected to Congress.
Yes.
Now, I'm sure that that's not an unusual circumstance. I think that everyone deserves an ethics investigation in Congress because I think everyone is probably doubling their wealth in Congress.
They don't get paid that much, people.
They don't get paid that much. And also, they're just, like, they're in the halls of power. The people that want things from them have money. They don't have the money.
Right.
It's like, at some point, you just, like, assume that the money is going to change hands.
Yeah.
And you can't know exactly how much money people have in Congress because you only really get, like, general estimates. But it's estimated that his personal wealth is at about $1.4 million.
Mm-hmm.
And there are already complaints because he's been taking, like, rides on donor aircraft. And there was the whole office decorating thing. And he's had all these taxpayer-funded, like, random trips to, like, go see Britney Spears or whatever he was up to. Like, went to Vegas and all these other places on donor-funded trips.
Yeah.
Now, we're finding that he describes himself as a real estate developer professionally. Yeah. Now, that's a fake thing that he made up, because that's not what he does professionally. He's just a guy who's had real estate investments.
Yeah.
But they're now finding that there are all these donor ties to the real estate investments that he makes the bulk of his money from.
Mm-hmm.
So, donors have financed and built a house on land that he owned in Peoria, which was a deal that was done with the guy that his sister ended up marrying, who's like a major donor to his campaign fund and also apparently a business friend of his.
Sure.
Now, you should keep in mind, politicians are allowed to do business with donors if the terms are, like, quote, commercially reasonable. But nobody is sure if these terms were commercially reasonable. He also mysteriously owns a stake in this, like, apartment complex with a bunch of other donors of
his. Right, and he's making a lot of money on that per year.
A ton of money on it per year.
Like a salary.
Like, Yeah, like $50,000 to $100,000 a year on this, like, weird investment that, like,
is in a random apartment complex.
Apartment complex with a bunch of donors, that, and some of which are organizations and not people. Like,
right.
It's so confusing.
Yeah.
And then he also, in 2010, back, I think, when he was working at the state level, tried, or no, this was when he was in Congress, I guess. He tried to push for a federal appropriation that would have benefited one of his development donor friends. This guy, Alexis Kazam.
Like that.
Hired him to do consulting for business development during his time in the state legislature, and he proposed a $1.8 million earmark fund to replace an old railroad with a bike path, but it was mostly so that this guy could build, like, you know, a commercial complex along the path.
Yeah.
But in any case, the ethics investigation heat is getting hotter.
It is.
This is also a man who has hired a personal photographer to travel with him.
Right, exactly. Well, and he's...
who may or may not be his gay lover.
Yes. I mean, we've seen the outfits that prove that it probably is.
Right.
His gay lover.
Right.
But I think that we also talked recently about the fact that he has... we know that he has lawyered up recently.
Right.
I think also, didn't he... wasn't there... and it's not in here, but I want to say that I heard something about him... didn't he sell his home for, like...
yeah, he sold like his home
10 times more than it was, like, he bought it for or something.
To a donor,
like,
as well.
To a donor, right. Yeah. So that's another thing. Like, I mean, they're just... it's going to be hard for him, I think, to... one of these has to stick.
One of these,
I mean,
must, it's just, right.
You know, I mean...
I hope it's the trip to Vegas.
There seems to be a pattern here.
Yeah. Well, and are they surprised? I mean, this is a guy who is basically just in there to fundraise.
Yeah.
You know, he's like a Ken doll.
That's it.
Yeah, he's like their model friend that they like have model for them, and then people are like, "The Republicans are so pretty. Of course, I'll give them money."
Yeah, exactly. Look at his abs.
Yeah, exactly.
And I do like them.
I need a congressperson with a great six pack if I'm gonna trust them to do the people's work.
That's right.
That's
why can't we get a hot Democrat?
They aren't there.
They're not there currently.
They're not there.
They exist.
They must exist somewhere.
I'm one.
Right. If you want to run for office, I'll take lots of pictures of you if you want.
Will you?
We've and post them on Randomville. But I'll be your personal photographer if you need one.
Who's going to buy things for me? How do I get rich?
Exactly.
I follow the Aaron Schock model. Is that what I do?
And get private flights to Vegas to go see Britney
Spears. Couldn't you just got like a hot gay sugar daddy?
I mean, it seems like...
maybe that's what all of these guys are.
It seems like he might have that, yeah. It doesn't seem like entirely out of the question that he would not already have that.
Yeah.
And by the way, if these are sugar daddies of some form.
Some form, right.
Right. Whether or not that form is sexual or not.
Right.
They are sugar daddies.
Yeah.
They're his foster frees, if you will.
They are, yeah.
We like to call it foster frees Newt Gingrich's sugar daddy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, in any case... Tomorrow/today, the day that you're listening to this podcast, is the day of the Israeli elections that were the elections that Netanyahu was basically coming to campaign for Congress. Right. Mm-hmm. In the American Congress.
Yeah.
And polls have swung away from Netanyahu at this point.
It didn't work out so well as he thought. Maybe they were
swinging to the left. Yeah.
Right.
And so he's gotten nuts. And has just started, like, ranting crazy conservative things in the last few days just to, like, try to make something stick.
Yeah, he's going crazy.
He has, in the past, in 2009 at least, supported a two-state solution.
Yeah.
Yesterday he decided, never mind.
Not on his watch.
Not on his watch. That would never happen.
Nope.
And then he's also been, like, randomly talking about, like, global conspiracy theory and, like, all these things to just, like, try to panic everyone in Israel into voting for him.
He's reaching.
He's reaching.
That's what he's doing.
He's accusing rivals of colluding with Arabs and moneyed antagonists.
Oh my.
In the global conspiracy to oust him.
So nefarious.
Well, all he's got at this point is claims that nefarious things are going on to oust him.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a reason they kicked him out of office the first time.
I was going to say.
It wasn't because he's a lovely guy.
No.
But also, I mean, in his sudden turn on the two-state solution thing, he's really lost the trust of a lot of the international community who were sort of hoping that at some point he could just be a reasonable person.
Right,
and he's like, already basically proven that he can't be. And now he's being even less reasonable.
That is what, like, the literal entire rest of the world wants.
Exactly.
Okay? Like, that is what U.S. presidents have been thinking that they were going to do. It's like the goal of every U.S. president, like, since Israel... became a thing. It's the goal
of most of the leaders in the Middle East.
Well, right.
It's not. It's like a thing. It's the one thing we can all agree on.
Right.
Where the borders of that state are, how we protect the states from each other. Those are all things no one agrees on.
Right.
What we can all agree on is the one. We'd like to try.
Yeah.
A two-state solution deserves a shot. And that is now, and Brand is drinking ice water, in case you're wondering what that noise was. It's hot out. It's a million trillion degrees. So we're having to hydrate so that we don't die while we rant and rave during the podcast.
Yeah, but if you hear clanking, I apologize, but also it's necessary.
Right.
You could either hear the clanking or you could hear me passed out on the floor.
Exactly.
Those are your two options.
Sound. It'd be a really boring podcast. But in any case, because he's now realizing that polls are swinging away from him, he's just, like, lost his fucking shit completely.
Yeah.
And in the process of losing his shit, so even if he does get reelected at this point, now no one in the international community wants to work with him because he seems like such an asshole.
Yeah.
So, in any case, no one knows what's going to happen.
Might not win.
Sort of exciting.
Anyway,
you'll
know as you're listening to this,
As you're listening to this, or you'll at least start to know the beginnings of what's happening as you listen to this. But it's going to be exciting.
Yeah. This is just a random story that there's...
My mom sent this to me.
Yeah. And I love it.
It's one of the great stories.
It's one of the great stories.
Podcast.
I enjoy it because it's also basically what it is. We've talked about a lot of like the randos who are maybe running for president, but also maybe aren't necessarily, but like could be, or people think that they should or whatever. And here's more of them. And none of these are necessarily people who have said that they were going to do it. Some of them are.
But these are also people that either in this cycle or in the last cycle or in some other cycle have been named.
Some of these people have not named themselves, but have been named by others. Yeah. And some of them are interesting, so we're just going to tell you who they are because it's a real who's who of...
And on the Republican side, it's always exciting to add more contender names.
Right, because there's already
1 trillion
people.
Oh,
so many.
Exactly.
Uh-huh.
So we begin with... John Kasich, who, governor of Ohio / international crazy person.
That's right.
Or national crazy person. I guess he's not an international crazy person. Yep. Mm-hmm. But he's a union buster and an asshole, so they love him on the right.
Love him.
Susana Martinez, former New Mexico governor.
Woman, Hispanic, governor.
The current governor of Mexico.
She's the current.
She's still the governor of New Mexico. That hasn't changed. Yeah. Never mind.
That's okay.
But she's someone that every election cycle they talk about.
They always talk about her for vice president.
Right.
They talk about
that's because she's a woman.
She's a woman.
You can't trust women to run the free world,
certainly
obviously.
Not.
But she's somebody that gets named a lot because she's fairly moderate and fairly kind of well-liked. Mm-hmm. And seems like someone who, first of all, she would help them with a Latino vote.
I was going to say, she checks off the boxes.
She checks off some boxes for them.
Yeah.
But second of all, she's like... If they're going to run someone really inflammatory for president, she's like a good foil to an inflammatory person.
Totally.
Because she's like fairly reasonable.
Yeah.
Kathy McMorris Rodgers.
Right. She's got a leadership in the House GOP. Like, she just sort of always pops up on the...
She's one of those people. They're just naming.
People are always, like, making lists of women who could run.
Right.
Or, like, black people who can run.
Exactly.
Or, like, you know,
and
just some sort of,
And on the Republican side,
like,
those lists get very desperate.
Very desperate.
I mean, they're pretty desperate on the Democratic side, but they're real desperate on the Republican side.
So that's a real reach
exactly.
Kathy McMorris Rodgers. She did give the... Didn't she give the... The Republican response to the State of the Union, not last year, because last time Joni Ernst did. I think that she did.
One of the many responses that they seem to do these days.
She did.
Yeah.
Last year, in the last years, I think. She sort of was like an up-and-comer, if you will.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mike Pence, governor of Indiana, he gets thrown in a lot.
Yes,
Nikki Haley, South Carolina governor /
crazy
person.
Hated
by her own constituents to a degree that is almost hard to fathom, but for some reason, because she's female probably, everyone keeps throwing her into the mix.
Native American,
yes, exactly.
God, can you imagine her and Lindsey Graham battling it out for the heart and soul of South Carolina?
You're right. Could be a real exciting...
Mm-hmm.
They're interestingly... She, as a person who I think has more credibility as a person who has actually recently been elected there, more hated than him, by far.
Curious,
but not surprising. John Bolton, Mr. Mustache, as we've mentioned many times, also in the mix. Joe Scarborough.
He has actually, I think, sort of like...
Expressed interest.
But just like a ridiculous interest.
He's a ridiculous person.
Well, right, exactly. He was in Congress.
That's true.
But... I mean, that's not happening for him.
Though.
It's not happening for him.
Like, that's what he is.
Exactly. Democrats, there are some fun names on the Democratic list. Some of them,
Brent added a lot of exclamation points to.
specifically, the first one being Russ Feingold.
Right.
I added the most.
That was there's a lot of exclamation points. He also exclamation pointed Sherrod Brown, but only with 3, and Russ Feingold has more than I can count.
Yeah, exactly. But those are the two on this list. After we read the rest of the names, you'll realize why these are the ones that had the exclamation points. Yeah. But Russ Feingold, I mean, that's
a dream.
That's the dream. If we're not going to get Elizabeth Warren, then let's get Russ Feingold 1 or Sherrod Brown 2. Right. I mean, those are the other answers.
Let's do one of the right things somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What I would like is for Russ Feingold to rerun for his old Senate seat if he's not good, because it's going to be in a presidential year and it's against Tim Johnson, who barely beat him and who is too crazy for words.
And he's a nobody. He's a crazy nobody.
He won in 2010 in the Tea Party wacko wave, that off-year election. So, like, let's get him back in there.
Yeah. I feel like he deserves the seat back.
Right.
Tim Johnson hasn't been doing anyone any favors.
No, he's the worst, too. He's terrible.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
There's also Howard Dean.
Howard Dean, who I would have...
Perennial name haver.
Right, exactly. Who I would have, in a maybe previous life, put exclamation points after.
We record on Howard Dean's... My computer rests on Howard Dean's book.
Yeah, it's my own personal book.
Yeah, as we record this podcast every week.
And I love him, but
Howard
I don't...
Howard Dean infuses the spirit of this podcast.
Yeah, exactly, but
respects.
I don't love that he has been such a, like, a, you know... outright Hillary supporter of late. He's not running, so I'm surprised that he ended up on this list because he's already said
definitively
that
not going to run against Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Here's what I love about Howard Dean. The man thought of the 50-state strategy. I think that that should have been the strategy going forward for the rest of time.
Yep.
It has failed to be the strategy of late. But Howard Dean has always been too moderate for my taste anyway.
Yeah.
Like, he was, like, the best choice in a year of moderates.
Right.
Remember when it was exciting that he was going to win because our other options were, like, John Kerry?
Right, exactly. Well, he is sort of moderate. The reason that he was not moderate at the time and why I supported him was because he was obviously, you know, big into to LGBT rights at the time.
Yeah. And no one else was really saying anything at that point.
And so everybody was sort of like all the... And he was also anti-war. And so
the progressives were supporting him because he was anti-war.
Right, exactly. But he's a big deficit hawk.
Huge deficit hawk. I'm not.
No, neither am I.
I didn't necessarily feel the need to go along with that.
Yeah, exactly.
Amy Klobuchar, who we mentioned before,
last week, I think.
John Hickenlooper.
Oh, yeah,
governor of Colorado and has a crazy last name.
You can't have President Hickenlooper.
No, that sounds so folksy and ridiculous.
I mean, there are some things that are sad.
Yeah.
One of them is that
if your last name is Hickenlooper, you can't be the president.
If you're John Bolton, it's sad for you that you can't be elected with that mustache.
No, I know.
Chris Christie cannot be elected for being the world's fattest man. These are things that are unfortunate for those people who own these things.
Right.
But they are realities that we live in 21st century America. I almost said 20th century America. But, you know, John Hickenlooper can't be president.
Well, 20th century America is where John Bolton's mustache belongs.
Well, that's very true. Yeah.
And it's where John Hickenlooper's name belongs.
Yeah, exactly.
But then also Tim Kaine, another name that periodically gets thrown into the mix.
Boring senator from
Virginia. Very boring. Also not interesting. Right. I know. If we could get some more exciting exclamation point people onto these lists, then I would, like, where...
Well, and here, the thing is...
Is Kirsten Gillibrand on this list?
Right, exactly.
Where are the exciting people?
Right. Well, and that is the thing, because besides the fact that I enjoy these sort of... crazy people, if you will. I mean, they're not crazy, but I mean, is because A, I generally agree with them, but B, we are already in a year where we have one of the world's most boring people running for the Democratic side. So if you want to be another person who was going to run against a boring person who has the name recognition and is like the most famous person on earth from either party, you also can't be a less famous, boring person.
Right. No, exactly.
That's not the answer.
That's not
the answer. That is not how you will... You will only beat Hillary Clinton if you are crazy and you are able to attract enough of the crazy people and get enough people excited by your brand of craziness.
Yeah.
I'm using crazy wrong because, like,
these
are people
crazy
that I love.
You're something delightful.
But delightful. Exactly. You have to be a certain
brand of delightful.
Your brand of delightful. Not crazy.
No.
You know? But, you know, so Tim Kaine is out.
No,
it's the same reason why Martin O'Malley is out.
Exactly.
It's the same reason why...
Poor Martin O'Malley.
You know, Amy Klobuchar would probably be out.
Yeah.
And John Hickenlooper, besides having a boring name, would also probably be out.
Yeah.
These are boring humans.
Exactly.
Okay? We already have a boring human who's winning.
Right. We don't need someone who is more aggressively boring than them.
It's not the answer.
That's not how you do it.
No.
That's how the Republicans do it.
No.
That's not how we do it.
No. Now, if you were running in 2008, then... If you're, you know, that might have worked for you. It certainly worked for John Kerry.
Exactly.
He was the most
boring
person.
He out-boringed a whole lot of them.
The Democrats often pick the most boring candidate. We didn't in 2008.
No, and
somehow
it's worked
or another.
Out well
I meant 2004
for us.
When I was talking about John Kerry, by the way. Yeah. But You know what I meant.
In 2008, we did not pick a Bourne candidate, and it worked out pretty well for us.
Yeah, it was great.
We found all these people who suddenly were going to vote, who hadn't wanted to vote before.
Yeah.
Who were just like, yeah, I'll stand in a line for six hours while they're trying to disenfranchise me because I want to vote for this guy.
Because they were delightful.
Exactly. Because of his brand of delight. Yeah. Right. So that's what we're looking for in a candidate, is someone whose brand of delight is so exciting that people want to wait for 6 hours to vote for them.
Yeah.
That's what we're not going to find in Tim Kaine or Martin O'Malley or a lot of these boring white men.
Yeah. I fear sometimes, or Hillary Clinton.
Or Hillary Clinton. I fear all times, or Hillary Clinton.
Fair enough.
I'm a fearer of that.
Yeah.
I'm one of the great fearers.
Yeah.
A long history of fearing.
Now, so those were a list of dark horse candidates, and we have another dark horse candidate that we have talked a lot about in recent weeks.
Who may not himself believe that he's a dark horse candidate.
No, I think he thinks that he is a very real candidate.
A light horse candidate,
but,
if you will.
You know, I doubt a lot of real candidates were speaking at the Politics and Pie Forum in Concord, New Hampshire last week. So I think that right there should just tell him something.
That sounds about as aggressively folksy as New Hampshire can possibly be. Like, New Hampshire can get quite folksy.
I was going to say. I mean, in Iowa, that seems like something that...
Everyone would be at
the Politics and Pie is like, that could be the political event of the season.
No, I mean, exactly.
You know, I mean, everybody on Earth goes to the Harkin steak fry.
Exactly. It's not even a real thing.
No one even is clear what that is, but everyone goes.
No, of course. So something folksy like the Politics and Pie Forum would be just the ticket in Iowa.
Yeah, but...
In New Hampshire, it seems like they'd want something a little bit more moderate than less folksy.
Yeah, exactly. But Lindsey Graham was there, and he had, you know, all these candidates talk about, like, what their first order of business in office is going to be. Lindsey Graham has stumbled upon his.
Yes.
And it's to use the military against Congress.
Right. He wants to make sure that Congress votes to fund the military to his satisfaction.
Right, so he will use the military to make sure they do it.
He's to hold them there until they vote the way that he wants them to.
Yeah.
Coercion, by the way, not legal.
Not legal.
Not a thing that you're allowed to do in Congress.
No.
Unless, apparently, you're the president, Lindsey Graham.
Right.
Who believes that as the head of the armed services, it is your responsibility to do so.
And I bet Lindsey Graham is one of these people, and I'm sure we can find specific examples, who talks about Obama's overreach.
Oh, for sure.
Obama has not yet sent the, you know...
Well, Lindsey Graham is like a huge obsessor about immigration stuff.
Yeah.
He was Anchor Babies was his was his pet issue. I mean, Lindsey Graham still got some ice.
More ice. I was trying to do it really gracefully, but it just can't
be
done.
It's hard with ice. But yeah, Anchor Babies were a Lindsey Graham invention. So, you know, this is right up his alley.
Oh, boy. Anyway, that's not legal.
That's
it's unconstitutional.
Not legal. Don't do that. If that's your first order of business, you shouldn't be president.
Correct.
If you are openly claiming that that's your first order of business, there are things that disqualify you just by their very nature.
That's one.
Ted Cruz is not qualified to be president because he was not born in America.
Right.
And you are required to be born in America to be president.
There are a lot of people who are calling for the fact that a lot of the people should no longer be an option after signing this O'Brien letter.
Exactly. Because of treason. Because of the word treason that Brent and I are tiptoeing around but also using.
Right. Yeah.
And this is another thing that I would argue is pretty treasonous, and you should also not be allowed to be president if it's your plan.
Yeah. Agreed.
In any case, in delightful news... If you are a Palin, I guess. Bristol Palin is engaged.
Oh, she's engaged.
Whoa.
Finally.
Finally. Yeah, engaged to a human male.
Mm-hmm. Maybe her out-of-wedlock daughter can be her flower girl.
Exactly.
Oh, it's a boy. It's Trip, right?
Trip.
He can be the ring bearer.
You can't know with these names that they use in the Palin family.
Yeah.
I was an out-of-wedlock
I was
flower
just
girl,
about
and I was
to
a delight.
Say, I was going to say, I was just, that was not a knock against that happening.
Right.
But.
It's happening out there.
It's. A knock on her on some level because they're from the family values.
Exactly.
Family.
Right.
That's how it's a knock.
Right. Yeah. It's a knock on the values that they supposedly espouse.
Yes.
Yes. One of the values that they are now espousing is getting engaged at Rascal Flatts concerts.
No. You can't. You just.
Do better.
Don't do that.
Find somewhere else to get engaged. You literally have all the other places.
Right. You're in Vegas. There are romantic
tacky
places.
Tacky and romantic
there.
Places.
Both.
To get that are not Rascal Flatts concerts.
Yeah.
All over the place.
Yeah. Oh, boy. And they enlisted the lead singer.
Oh, it's so disgusting.
Yeah. I know.
So horrifying.
He dedicated Bless the Broken Road to them.
Ugh.
And then got down on one knee and proposed. It's amazing to see what happens when you place everything in life in God's hands.
Sarah Palin was working overtime to come up with a slightly non-English response to this.
She did a good
Found
job.
Found one.
Yep.
Here's what she wrote. Yes, God working behind the scenes to turn beauty from ashes.
Oh, my.
Had tough circumstances in their lives not occurred, and had they reacted differently to those circumstances, they'd have never met.
Well, I certainly couldn't know what that means.
No. Don't know, care.
She's referencing things that I just am not going to research.
She's using grammar that I have not yet heard before.
Right.
It's a complicated word stew over there, and it's not one I'm interested in diving into.
Nope.
But I'm glad to see that she worked so hard on a statement for this issue. For this,
yeah,
it's really
at least punctuation in there.
Yeah, that's true. She oftentimes doesn't go as far as punctuating.
Everything appeared to be spelled right.
Well, we don't know whether someone else took it into their hands when we from the article that we pulled.
But God working behind the scenes.
Yeah,
man.
God's just working behind the scenes. He's working in front of the scenes.
I was just about to say.
Every one of them referenced God as if they had nothing to do with this situation.
Yeah.
As if their actions hadn't somehow involved them deciding to take actions.
Right. The God I know wouldn't have done this at a Rascal Flatts concert.
Okay? I hope not.
That's not my God.
Right. Also, I feel like I would be slightly offended if everyone implied that my engagement was the result of God's actions and not like choices made by the person who wanted to marry me. It's always so curious to me that everyone's so desperately trying to give God all the credit for this thing, and that you kind of want to be the personal choice of the person who just asked you.
Right?
You don't want God to have made that choice for them.
Does he
that's
really
coercion.
Love me, or was it just God?
Exactly.
Yeah,
how
right?
do you know? You can't know if that's your thought process.
Right.
I feel like I would want to feel like God was, this was firmly out of God's hands. That he had nothing to do with this decision.
Right. Maybe if you're a religious person, you can accept that God blessed it.
Right, exactly.
Right?
But that's as far as I'd want him to go.
Right, exactly.
I don't want him to decide who to marry, who I'm supposed to marry.
Yeah, exactly.
In final news.
And in best news.
Best news.
This is just almost, this is going to be hard to explain because it's too crazy to unpack.
But we're going to lead you on an interesting cyclical story that ends in a place that you wouldn't expect it to end.
No.
It involves Glenn Beck. And it begins with a wacko crazy person named Frank Gaffney.
That might not be so shocking to you that it starts with Glenn Beck and a crazy person.
Right. This crazy person is a sort of famed conspiracy theorist who at one point claimed that Grover Norquist, the crazy anti-tax guy that's always trying to make everyone sign his anti-tax pledge.
Right.
And because of that seems to like run Congress, but like just because he's he's a nobody. I mean, he's a nobody with a pledge.
Right.
Anyway, Frank Gaffney claims that Grover Norquist has ties to the Muslim Brotherhood. No one's clear on what those ties are.
No, like this is a person who is too crazy to speak at CPAC.
Exactly.
Like they have disinvited him from CPAC.
Right, yeah. Frank Gaffney has been disinvited from CPAC.
Right. Was, quote, he has personally and tiresomely obsessed with his weird belief that anyone who doesn't agree with him is either blind to the dangers America faces or dupes
of the nation's enemies.
So
that's, by the way, what every person at CPAC thinks. And so for them to find him too crazy for that reason.
Right, exactly.
Is a real curious
But a person that crazy has a home on the Glenn Beck show.
So true.
So Glenn Beck invited him on the show.
Right.
And to talk about this.
Side information that you need to know, which is that Grover Norquist is a board member of the NRA.
Board member of the NRA, right.
So, this guy comes on Glenn Beck's show.
Yes.
Convinces Glenn Beck to be concerned that Grover Norquist is somehow involved in the Muslim Brotherhood.
Mm-hmm.
And then forces Glenn Beck, as a result, to disavow the NRA.
His
favorite organization.
So Glenn Beck is no longer in favor of the NRA, because Grover Norquist is a member of the Muslim Brotherhood.
According to Frank Gaffney, noted crazy person.
That's it.
I mean, that's it. Here's Glenn Beck's quote. I find this so serious, and I find him, Norquist, such a dangerous man that I may reject my membership to the NRA if he's reelected. I just don't think I can stand with the organization. And I love this organization.
Mm, yes.
I think they do an awful lot of good, and I think they're really good people.
Sure.
And I've helped raise millions of dollars for them. Mm. But Grover Norquist is a very, very bad and dangerous man, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Frank Gaffney's a hero, by the way.
What? Seriously.
What thought, like, how did we end up here?
I know. I mean, I saw this headline and I was like, well, this can't possibly make sense.
No.
And it really doesn't, I guess. I mean, I now sort of get how he got here, but I mean, wow.
Wow.
That's,
you really have to be diving into a level of crazy that is almost hard to believe in order to arrive at this place.
Right.
And this is a man. I mean, what I love about Frank Gaffney is he's made Glenn Beck change his mind about something.
Well, that's true.
You know, whatever, whether or not his reasons are slightly suspect.
Slightly.
I would love to see the NRA and the Muslim Brotherhood tossed together in the same sentences all the time.
Yeah,
by the way,
do it.
I mean, that doesn't bother me one bit. So Frank Gaffney has really gone. You know, we were talking about politics being, or political belief being sort of a cycle, like a ring more than it is
a
line, a straight line.
Yeah.
And so if you end up too far on the right, you somehow accidentally come back out on the left.
You don't always know what's happening.
They're sort of straddling the line at the moment.
They are.
They might accidentally be giving credence to a far left claim that the NRA is very dangerous.
Yeah.
By implying that they're in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood through Grover Norquist, a person who could not have less to do with the Muslim Brotherhood if he tried.
I know. It's just
he's
too bonkers.
He's just a man who hates taxes. That's his only claim to fame. That's the only thing
he's
up to.
And loves guns, apparently.
And loves guns, yeah. Yeah, he's an NRA member who hates taxes. What a surprise. In any case, that's the news this week. We'll leave you to ponder that curious situation.
Yeah.
And we will be back next week with more news
That's right.
about things that are happening in the news.
That's right.
Talk Bye. To you next week. Bye.